You're listening to Clinical Conversations. I'm Joe Elia. Earlier this week, the BMJ published a study on the frequency with which U.S. clinicians are overtesting for glycated hemoglobin, hemoglobin A1c. The study's first author, Rosalina McCoy, has agreed to talk with us about her study. She's an assistant professor of medicine in the Division of Primary Care Internal Medicine and the Division of Health Sciences Research at Mayo Clinic. Welcome, Dr. McCoy.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure being here.
Let's set the stage for the discussion. You followed about 32,000 patients with type 2 diabetes for 2 years after their having had serial hemoglobin measurements showing that they had excellent glycemic control. Is that correct?
That's right. So this is a retrospective study using administrative data from across the United States.
And then you used claims data to count how often their glycated hemoglobin levels were measured in the two ensuing years. And you defined three levels of frequency. You had guideline compliant, more or less, so that was two or fewer tests per year. Frequent testing, which was three or four times a year, and excessive testing, which was five or more times per year.
That's right.
So what did you find?
So in this population of patients with type 2 diabetes who were well controlled, all of their hemoglobin A1C at enrollment was less than 7% and stable in that range. They were not treated with insulin. We confirmed that they had type 2 rather than type 1 diabetes, and we excluded women who were pregnant during the study period. And we found that in this 31,500 roughly patients, only 40% were checked as recommended by the guidelines, which was once or twice per year. Nearly 55%, more than half, were checked 3 to 4 times a year, and almost 6%, more than 1,800 patients, were checked 5 or more times per year.
And what got you interested in the question of overtesting? Was it the costs of overtesting or the dangers of overtreatment and overdiagnosis?
I think the first time I really thought about this was in my clinical practice. As an endocrine fellow, as well as a primary care provider, I saw many patients who had good, stable glycemic control, and yet they, either per habit or protocol, had their hemoglobin A1C checked quarterly or sometimes more often than that. And I found myself not knowing what to do with the result when it kept coming back normal, other than telling patients that, yes, you're doing the right thing. Because they weren't on insulin and often not receiving any medications at all, how to talk to my patients about these persistently normal results from tests, I did not think that they needed. And in that context, I wanted to see, well, how big is this problem nationally?
I see. And so when you mentioned you wanted to examine the effect nationally, there you did find regional differences, didn't you? And sitting here in the Northeast, I'm embarrassed to say that we were the most likely region of the country to overtest, weren't we?
We did. We did find regional differences, and our study found the same trends as were seen in many other studies looking at overuse as well as low-value services, thinking back to the Dartmouth Project, et cetera. We found that the Midwest did very well, while the Northeast tended to be the worst when it came to overtesting.
Yeah, so you're in the Midwest, aren't you?
We are. We were very happy to find find that result.
Good. And there were other variables. For instance, the Charlson Comorbidity Index. You observe in the paper that people with a higher index were more likely to be overtested, and that's not a surprise, is it?
It wasn't a surprise, and yet, at the same time, it is concerning. You know, we saw that patients who are sicker, so have a higher Charlson score, they have more tests. Mm-hmm. That could be because their providers are more worried about their health, or because they just see their providers more often, so there's more opportunity for testing. However, all of these patients have well-controlled diabetes and they're not on insulin. So the likelihood of their blood sugars changing is still very low. The fact that they're sick does not make it any more likely. And if you think about the recommendations both for testing and for treatment of diabetes, older patients and those with multiple comorbidities are at much higher risk for low blood sugars, so it is recommended that they're not treated as intensely and not tested as frequently as well. So this observation also really went against the current guidelines and practices.
There are other variables, and as a matter of fact, the more specialists people saw, I shouldn't put it that way, there were some specialties that tended to over-test. Among them were endocrinologists and kidney specialists. Now, would you not be surprised to find that somebody, you know, going to a nephrologist would be, the nephrologist might say, okay, here's a new patient I'm seeing, and the first thing they do is get a panel of tests, isn't it? It's almost
absolutely
reflexive,
and,
yeah.
No, it's absolutely, and I think that one of the main limitations of using administrative data is that we can make observations about what happens, and we can infer from that, but we truly can't definitively ascertain causality. And just like you said, endocrinologists and nephrologists, so specialties who are more likely to see diabetes patients with complications or with poor control, are more likely to want to reassess their health status more frequently when following them kind of long term, and also to check baseline levels upon referral. So I think that may explain our observation here. The other point you made is the number of providers they saw, and that was a significant contributor in over-testing as well. So for each additional healthcare provider, irrespective of specialty, we saw increased likelihood of over-testing, really pointing to a potential role of fragmentation of care, lack of interoperability of medical records.
Yeah.
So one provider may not know that an A1C was checked by another provider or in a different lab.
Mm-hmm.
And using billing data, we have the benefit of knowing the totality of a patient's services, but individual providers do not have that information when all they know is what the patient told them and what they see in their medical record.
Isn't it easier for somebody to say, instead of making a phone call to another provider, to say the referring provider, isn't it easier for the person to say, let's just get an A1C on this patient and check it out?
Exactly. So it's easier to check the test. And what I find amazing is that very often our health insurance knows a lot more about our health than our doctors do.
Uh-huh.
Precisely because they have all of that information available to them because they're paying for it.
Yeah.
And ideally, the payers would share that information with a patient's doctors and the patient's electronic medical record. So you'd have bidirectional flow of information.
Right.
But I think that's a long way into the future.
Right. What about treatment intensification? You observed that, and I will just give the cartoon version of it. You observed that people who are more guideline compliant in their tests for A1C were less likely to receive treatment intensification, and those who were overtested were almost twice as likely to get treatment intensification, right?
Well, they were 35% more likely, so about a third.
Yeah,
fortunately,
okay.
Not double.
Okay.
And you're right. I think this the initial goal of our study was to identify the prevalence of overtesting, and as we saw this and we looked at the medications patients were using before and after, it was very concerning that patients were on more medications after testing, which led us to kind of extend our study and look at, well, what does happen to the patient's treatment regimens after they have that baseline A1C of less than 7%. And we found that despite the fact that all of these patients are meeting glycemic targets, by the inclusion criteria of the study, almost 9% had their treatment intensified further by addition of another medication or by addition of insulin. And the patients who were tested excessively, so 5 or more times per year, were 35% more likely to be intensified. So the odds ratio was 1.35.
Uh-huh.
Initially, we thought, well, perhaps patients are being tested and their doctors feel the need to act. So they would kind of intensify and de-intensify them at sort of similar rates.
Mm.
And we didn't see that to be the case. There was no relationship between frequency of tensing and de-escalation of therapy.
Huh.
And these patients, many had hemoglobin A1Cs less than 6%, truly warranting de-intensification, and yet that didn't happen.
We've done an interview recently on de-intensification, and it was interesting in your paper to see that intensification and de-intensification were both done at roughly the same rates, although de-intensification was more frequent among the frequently tested, which could be good news. At least if people were being over-tested, at least their therapies were being cut back, you could say, or maybe you wouldn't say that.
So the patients in the excessively tested group did have their treatment de-intensified a little more, but if you take into account their baseline A1C, that relationship actually was not statistically significant because more patients in the excessively testing group had lower A1Cs. So once you control for their baseline A1C, the frequency of testing alone had no impact on whether they were de-intensified, but it did have an impact on whether they were intensified.
So as a result of all this, what do you think clinicians should be more aware of? Should you caution them that, listen, the A1C measurement's only a kind of running average of the previous 3 months of control, or what should they be thinking?
Several points that I really hope that providers take away from the study is that, you know, we really are checking hemoglobin A1C a lot more frequently than necessary. Among patients who are not on insulin, whose diabetes is well controlled, results of that test do not translate into need to change treatment. And getting these tests as often as we do really poses a significant burden on the patient, both in terms of time of going and having that test done, potential cost to the patient, and cost to the healthcare system. We consider how many individuals have diabetes in the United States. The potential cost to the system is staggering. And more than that, the fact that excessive testing ultimately can predispose the patient to treatment intensification despite baseline good glycemic control is an additional harm, because over-treatment can lead to hypoglycemia, again, increased burden of treatment, and greater risk of other adverse drug reactions. So while we may think that having more tests and more information is good for the patient, that's not necessarily the case. More is not always better.
So you would advise clinicians to sort of rein in their natural tendency to do something with the patient in front of them.
Exactly. I think it's okay for us as providers not to know sometimes if getting that additional test is unlikely to give us any new information. And for patients as well, I think that patients should be informed and engaged participants in their care, and feel free to ask their doctors about which tests they're having done and why.
Uh-huh.
Very often patients don't even know what blood tests are ordered. Giving the patient a permission to ask and to be able to justify why things are being done the way that they are, I think is important as we engage and share decision-making with our patients.
Well, I want to thank you, Dr. McCoy, for spending the time with us today.
Well, thank you very much.
That was our 192nd conversation. Go to podcasts.jwatch.org for the others in the series. And to leave your comments on all this, send email to jelia@nejm.org, or you can leave them on the site itself. My executive producer is Kristen Kelly. We come to you through the NEJM Group. Thank you for listening.